This is an ABC podcast.
And we hope to, next year, look at a fly that is actually spread throughout the world. So as a pollination agent, that will be very good for anybody, anywhere.
With bee populations under threat around the world, a nationwide project based in WA Southwest is turning to native flies to pollinate their crops. And Australia's Royal Flying Doctor Service is honoured in a new $20 banknote.
This $20 note, to me and to all those that work for the Flying Doctor, really just embodies that spirit and that, you know, make it happen, give it a go kind of attitude.
We'll be taking a look at the RFDS from its beginnings to what it's grown to be today. I'm Alex Hyman and this is Australia Wide. Firstly tonight we head to Queensland, to Australia's largest cattle sale yards in Roma, which is celebrating its 50th year. The cattle and beef industry keeps a keen eye on the influential Roma yards, as it often sets prices across the country. But against a backdrop of severe drought and tough times for many farmers, how is 2019 shaping up? Vicky Thompson has been in Roma today. Vicky, what's happened there at the Roma sale yards to celebrate 50 years?
Well, Alex, there was lots of things happening today and lots of people there, a lot of dignitaries, but it was still a store cattle sales day. So it was an average cattle sales day for the Roma cattle sale yard. So it was business as usual while all the pomp and ceremony were taking place. And, you know, there was lots of guided tours because it is a tourist attraction as well. So business as usual, but they did do the cutting of the cake and the politicians were there and lots of cameras. And but it was, yeah, it was pretty much a normal store cattle sale day for them.
Can you give us a sense of just how big the Roma sale yards are and what they mean for Australia's cattle industry?
The figures are quite huge. In the 50 years that it's been open, 11 million head of cattle have gone through the Roma sale yards in 50 years, and that equates to $5 billion in monetary terms. Their largest sales day was back in 2013. 14,000 cattle were sold in one day, which is a lot. And the most dollars that they took in a financial year was 2016-17. In one year alone, $335 million changed hands. It's so big numbers.
Huge numbers. Yeah, absolutely. Let's go back a ways to the early days of the sale yards. Ozzie Barron, he was on the board not long after the yards started back in 1969. Today he spoke to Baz Ruddick.
Probably an average of 3,000, sometimes 4. But under the present sale, we see anywhere between 8,000 and 12,000.
You know, what was a good price back then?
The average price in the, say, 70s, early 70s, was probably $50, $60 a head. And today, of course, if you get good bullocks, they can make $1,900 a head.
The industry has obviously become probably a little bit more automated?
Oh, definitely. And if we go back to the sale yards years ago, I remember the AMLC 30 years ago said there wouldn't be a sale yard left in Australia. Well, we're still here and they're still all over the country. So CALM was brought in and they thought that CALM would completely annihilate the sale yards, which it hasn't done.
That's Ozzie Barron. He was on the board of the Roma sale yards when they, well, not long after they started back in 1969, speaking there to Baz Ruddick. You're on Australia Wide. Alex Hyman here with you. And I'm chatting to Vicky Thompson. She's been at the Roma sale yards today. They are celebrating 50 years. Vicky, 7 years of drought in the Roma area. What effect has that had on the yards and those farmers who do business there?
So they yarded about 5,500 head of cattle today, and according to everyone at the sale, that's pretty good numbers considering we're in this really bad drought situation. You know, across the board, they're doing it really tough. They're quite stoic, though, but they still need a bit of a helping hand. It's costing them a lot of money when it comes to supplementary feeding them. So it does have an impact, but they're doing okay generally. But of course, you know, there are some mental health issues when we're talking farmers at the moment because of this drought.
What acknowledgement was there of the drought at today's event?
Oh, look, everyone talked about it. You know, there's no two ways about that. Everyone that got up and spoke talked about it. The auctioneers talk about it. You know, the farmers that turn up because it's a big social event, they talk about it. Interestingly enough, there was a team from the Southwest Hospital and Health Service there offering just to have a chat, to, you know, say the words, are you okay? And offering their services just to say, well, look, this is available for you. Sometimes all you need is just someone to have a chat to. So there were those services in place today, which I think when I spoke to the people from the Southwest Hospital Health Service, from their mental health unit, said that they are seeing an increasing demand from farmers in particular when it comes to dealing with drought.
And just finally, Vicky, we often hear about calls for farmers to diversify, and interestingly, the Roma sale yards have done just that. I understand, as you mentioned earlier, they've become something of a tourist attraction.
Yes, my understanding is that they were the first ones in Australia to become a tourist attraction. About 4 years ago, they had a vision to do this, and now they get, on average, about 4,000 tourists a year come through and go on these guided tours, and it's absolutely free of charge. And they get to see, it's a bit like a paddock-to-plate type experience. They can see where the cattle come from, how they auction them off, how they get delivered, how they get picked up, where they go to, what the different breeds are. So it's really interesting. And I saw some tour groups today. There was two, probably 100 people in total today, just people that are on school holidays and on bus trips, all ages, from all different parts of the country, coming through and having a look and just getting an education on the cattle industry.
An interesting day out. Vicky Thompson there at the Roma Sale Yard, celebrating 50 years of operation. We really appreciate you speaking to Australia Wide today.
Thanks, Alex. It was a pleasure.
You're listening to ABC Australia Wide.
And you're with me, Alex Hyman, filling in for Sinead Mangan this week. To the Hunter Valley in New South Wales now, where three female firefighters have quit amid allegations of indecent assault, sexual harassment and bullying. The trio all left Dungog Station in the past 6 months, claiming there was a toxic, misogynistic culture. Two men also resigned in a show of support. One of the female firefighters, Natalie Newton, has told Paige Coburn a male colleague pressured her for sex over several months.
I was asked to, would I have sex on the truck or in the one of the rooms or here, there, everywhere, numerous times, out on jobs.
Natalie said even after speaking out, she continued to be rostered on alone with her alleged harasser.
Basically, I was very isolated for a very long time in that station.
Renee Thompson, who was a decorated firefighter, says she was groped by a male colleague from the station, but was initially fearful to make a complaint.
You know, I'm an educated person. I know, in general, the statistics, how these things work. Usually when a woman comes forward with something like this, that, you know, the woman will lose her job.
Fire and Rescue undertook an investigation into the station but found it was highly unlikely that further action was needed. However, the decision was made to ban all women from the main station building, forcing them to work out of a disused garage. The dilapidated building had no computer access, so women were left in the dark and almost never made the truck in time. Renee said their ability to respond was completely compromised.
They all pile in and you're left standing on the driveway watching them go off into the distance, like holding all your stuff. So you've just raced up, managed to get through the door that's not even a full-size door, so you have to turn sideways to get through with all your equipment on, and race up these skinny, slippery stairs, which at the time had no handrail.
Fire and Rescue is now conducting a second review into the allegations, which Assistant Commissioner Paul McGuigan described as disappointing.
We will continue to listen to the needs of women and other people in our community and continue to strive to make sure that we work to becoming a more diverse and inclusive community. Are we perfect? No. But we won't stop until we get there.
He said the organisation is committed to providing a safe work environment for women.
We have zero tolerance for that sort of behaviour. I've not dedicated 34 years of my life, as this is a career, to compromise the safety in the community of New South Wales, nor the firefighters that I am charged for responsibility for.
But Renee has a dire warning for women thinking of becoming firefighters.
You'll be chewed up and spat out and damaged and, yeah, don't do it.
The investigation is expected to be completed in coming weeks.
Paige Coburn with that story, and we'll keep you up to date on any details that come from any further investigations.
This is ABC Australia Wide.
And you're with Alex Hyman.
We need to invest all of our resources, all of our human ingenuity. If the bees die, we die. Do we stand by and do nothing?
That's some of the Extinction Rebellion protesters today at Sydney's Hyde Park expressing their concerns over global declining bee populations. And in WA Southwest, innovation to address the bee dilemma has found a possible solution in Aussie flies. Native flies could help pollinate Southwest avocado trees if there is ever a day when bees aren't around to do the job. Bee numbers around the world are under threat for various reasons, so at a farm in WA Southwest, native flies are being trialled as pollinators as part of a nationwide study. Project leader David Cook says two species of fly are being released into netted avocado enclosures at a Busselton farm today.
Bees are on the decline because of environmental stresses and pesticide contamination, and the horticultural industry has identified a critical need to have a backup insect to do pollination services. Obviously, horticulture in Australia is expanding rapidly, so there's going to be an increasing demand for pollination insects. Flies are a great alternate pollinator to bees because they spend a lot of time visiting flowers, looking for nectar for energy, and as a consequence, they transport pollen around because a lot of the flies have very hairy bodies.
How are these trials working?
The trials are going really well. As you can see behind us, we've got an enclosure over two avocado trees. We did our first trial this time last year, literally at the start of the project, and although we didn't have enough flies that we wanted at the time, we still got a positive pollination effect, so they can clearly pollinate the avocado fruit. We've got 18 enclosures. In 9 of them, we're going to introduce one fly species, and we're going to release 1,000 flies into each enclosure. We leave the flies in there for the entire flowering period of the avocados, which lasts about 5 weeks. Once that's finished, we take down the mesh enclosures, and then we wait till the pollination result produces small fruitlets, and we'll do a count on those probably in about January, February next year. So that will give us an idea on how many fruit the flies were able to pollinate, and then we compare that with trees out in the open that have been pollinated by bees. So we've got some comparison between the two.
And what species of native fly are you using?
Yeah, we're using one fly that it's actually endemic to southwest Australia. It's called the Western Goldenhead fly. And then we're also using a fly that's endemic to all of Australia, and that's called the Western Blue-bodied fly. Okay. So they're the two species we're looking at this year. And we hope to, next year, look at a fly that is actually spread throughout the world. So as a pollination agent, that will be very good for anybody anywhere.
And it's my understanding, you know, we're not like other countries in Australia. We don't have a shortage of bees. So why is it necessary to explore other options?
Well, I think it's necessary, because, as I said, horticulture is expanding rapidly. There's two reasons. One is that we're always at risk of an incursion of a foreign pest or disease. For example, the varroa mite, which is not in Australia. If that came in, it would, you know, devastate the bee industry. There's foul brood disease, there's sudden colony collapse disorder, South African hive beetle, etc. So if any of those came in, the bee industry would be compromised, and so would horticulture. And the other thing is it just gives you more options to use as a pollinator. For example, bees do not work particularly well under protected cropping or, you know, within a glasshouse, greenhouse environment because the optics upset the bees' ability to navigate. So a fly, for example, would work better in that type of environment. But this project is all part of a national collaboration, so we're just one part of a project that goes over Queensland, New South Wales, Northern Territory, South Australia and Tasmania.
That's David Cook from WA's Department of Primary Industry and Regional Development speaking there to Jackie Lynch.
ABC Australia Wide.
I think it's wonderful. I think everyone should come and see it.
On ABC Radio.
Over the next 2 months, you'll be hearing a bit about a new project from the ABC called Australia Talks. It's a national survey of more than 50,000 people to find out who we are, what we care about, and where we're headed. We'll use your answers to bring you stories and have those conversations that are important to us as a nation. And you can also find out how your views compare to the rest of the country. Here's Alison Horne to explain how it all works.
Australia as we know it is a big, diverse and ever-changing country, and we've got some pretty strong opinions about this place we call home. The ABC's Australia Talks National Survey is getting right to the heart of it. We've asked nearly 500 questions to capture the views of more than 54,000 Australians, and that data has been weighted on the basis of markers like sex, age and geographic location to provide a nationally representative sample of the Australian population. The aim is to bring us together, to have an open conversation about the issues that are important to us as a nation so we can understand each other better. So, what do we think about Australia?
Australia is a great country. Great country to be here. I raise my kids here.
Australia have a nice people and nice person and nice country.
The best thing about Australia is it's free country.
It's laid back and you got different cultures when you go to different places.
Australia is the best country for me. I've been here for 7 years and I'm enjoying it still.
So there you have it. 70% of our population agrees this is the best place in the world in which to live. But if we look towards tomorrow, we've got some concerns. Only half of the population is optimistic about Australia's future, and 57% are dissatisfied with how things are going. So we asked, what are you worried about?
The job market is very, very competitive.
Personal debt. And I think a lot of people are causing themselves a lot of trouble by spending a lot of money when they don't really have it.
The wages, they just aren't enough.
We've got a lot of issues with water, like water supply to the farmers.
Looking after our environment and bringing up our children in a better environment.
90% of the population believes the biggest issues facing the country are household debt, cost of living and drug and alcohol abuse. But what about your personal concerns? We asked Australia what they consider a problem for them personally. 56% said health, 62% said saving enough money for retirement, and 72% of the survey population nominated climate change to be a problem.
What we're doing to this world now is impacting that new generation.
I think everyone's got their head in the sand. I'm a believer of climate change and I think we should be doing more.
Over the next 2 months, we'll dig further into these issues and others, including our national identity, how we feel about religion, and how happy we are. And if you're wondering how your views compare, well, we want you to be a part of the conversation. On the ABC website, you'll be able to answer a small selection of the survey questions and receive a personalised snapshot of your results to see where they fit in Australia. The web address is abc.net.au/Australia Talks.
Alison Horne with that story, and if you'd like to get involved, just search for ABC Australia Talks or go to your ABC News app and you'll find it there. Bit of a change of pace now. Robert Bob Reynolds is a bit of a legendary axeman in the southwest of Western Australia. Bob was raised around the timber industry of the Southern Forest near Manjimup. He's got sawdust in his blood. And he's WA's oldest competitive wood chopper at 82 years of age. John Daly caught up with him on the sidelines of the Perth Royal Show Veterans event.
Steady your logs. Get ready.
Oh, yes, it's a sport that gets in your blood. And it also, it's an individual sport where if 1 week you don't feel good and you don't do very good, you don't upset anybody except yourself. It's a good hobby. And I tell the grandkids when they're cutting, it's a good run you can do for a long time.
Now, you're in your
80s, 82, is that right?
That's right, yeah, it's 82.
What do you reckon? Is it the elixir of longevity, competitive wood chopping?
No, I think it might be bacon and eggs for breakfast.
Some people at your age wouldn't be able to do what you do.
No, it's quite. I do quite a lot of training. And in actual fact, I'm in the standards, I'm quite fit, because when I chop a log off, it'll take me 60, 70 seconds, and the good ones are cut off in 25, so they're not even working, and there I'm slugging away for a minute and a half.
What's your training regime like these days?
About three times a week I have a bit of a heavy axe and dry logs, and I belt them, chop with them until around about 50 hits until I'm completely worn out, and I film the pulse. When it slows down, I do it again, and I do that three times on the stand block, three times on the underhand, and then I go to a crosscut saw and go as hard as long as I can on that.
Now, your roots are actually in the forestry industry in the southwest, is that right?
That's right. We shifted from Manjum up when I was nine. My old man, he was a wood job, but he also pegged the Gloucester tree and about four other trees. As far as I look at that, lined them up and cut the tops off and put cabin on them, and all he'd have around his waist was a bit of 200 feet up, a bit of clothesline.
Yeah, right.
That's all. And he smoked like a chimney.
Did he get you into wood chopping?
Oh, I guess you do. You are inclined to follow your parents. I never got on very well with him, but I followed him. Same as my son, I never pushed him.
Yeah, well, your son and your grandson now compete, don't they?
Yeah, son and three grandkids competing at the moment. All the country shows you go to, it's a family affair. The whole family stops there and watches it all day.
You know, you mentioned you're not as fast as you used to be, but do you reckon you got the technique down pat?
I've had it and I've lost it. I can't twist and bend properly. Especially that underhand in on the one side, I've got a hit wrong because I'm not twisting properly. So, I know what to do and how to do it, but the old muscles don't help you much. But I've had a good run with the wood chopping. I was in that event, that tree felling event there, I was state champion for about 20 years. I've been told that by several of the people here that I'm cutting better than I cut ever. But that's not for a long time.
That's all right.
Yeah, because I am quite fit, really. But that's probably not just all bacon and eggs.
But what do you love about it?
Oh, it's the fact of when you do it wrong or you get a bad lot, you get a bit upset for a few minutes. And the camaraderie of all these people here, you know, it's terrific.
You're a bit of a legendary axeman. Is there any end in sight for your competition days, Bob?
No, I don't think so.
That's WA's oldest axeman, perhaps Australia's. Bob Reynolds speaking there to John Daly. And finally tonight, a new $20 banknote will be released tomorrow. It will feature a portrait of Reverend John Flynn, who pioneered the Royal Flying Doctor Service, and a picture of an aircraft flying over a station in 1948. The people who lived on the station near Broken Hill remember that moment from the 40s. Saskia Mabin has the story.
The sound of a Royal Flying Doctor Service plane retracing a 1948 flight over a homestead in outback New South Wales.
That's it right there.
That flight has new significance as an image that will feature on the new $20 banknote. A 70-year-old photograph of a de Havilland Dragon flying over Velt Station was selected to appear on the note next to a portrait of RFDS founder Reverend John Flynn. Helen Bates grew up at Velt Station, north of Broken Hill, and remembers the day the photograph was taken.
I can remember the plane coming over very low because the pilot told us that, you know, because it was illegally, not legal at the height he flew, but he did it just for the photo so the photographer could get the plane in at the same time, you know. Dad said, now be careful of that aerial, be careful of that aerial. And Dad's in the photo holding a hat up, and we're all sure that that's what he's saying.
Helen and her siblings were among the first to receive vaccinations from the flying doctor.
Dad was very for immunisation, and flying doctor came to the Velt with the nurse. There was a flying nurse at the time, and she lined us all up. There was eight of us there at the time, and I've got a photo there, and we're all standing holding our arm out like chickens, but we weren't hurt, but we thought we were, you know, because we'd never even known what immunisation was.
The RFDS is the largest aeromedical service in the world, and communications manager Lana Mitchell says it's a symbol of Australian ingenuity.
We're so privileged at the Flying Doctor to be able to have our story embodied in a banknote in Australia, both the old one and now the new one. And it tells that story showing the importance of, the innovation and the dedication and the perseverance of the Australian spirit to solve a problem. Because the Flying Doctor is all about, okay, we've got vast distance, we've got, you know, a huge continent, and we have a problem with people living in areas where they just don't have access to healthcare. And so the Flying Doctor's mission really is to solve that problem. So this $20 note, to me and to all those that work for the Flying Doctor, really just embodies that spirit and that, you know, make it happen, give it a go kind of attitude that, you know, makes Australia what it is today.
Saskia Mabin with that story. And that's the show. Thanks so much for your company. I'll catch you tomorrow. Have a good night.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.